I'm Dr. Don McDonald. Welcome to Breaking the Underdog Curse, the podcast. I believe one of the most valuable things you can give yourself as a chiropractor is taking time. Time to become more inspired, present, and focused. Weekly, I'll be bringing you stories of triumph, mindset shifts, and lessons from people who are breaking through their limitations. In order for chiropractic to thrive, we must have thriving chiropractors. Now, let's get started. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Breaking the Underdog Curse. This is Dr. Don McDonald, your host, and I am going across the pond again over to New Zealand this time. And my special guest is Dr. Sheridan Kay. She is a chiropractor for 21 years, went to school at Life University. Her whole family's a chiropractor. She teaches Thompson Technique. She's helped out at the college in New Zealand, and she has a wonderful practice, and she's married to a chiropractor, and she has kids. And we met her probably 5-6 years ago at a Parker in Sydney. And then we got to spend a lot more time at her at a few Fiji on Fires, and we really love her, and I'm really excited to bring her on the show. So welcome, Sheridan, to the podcast.
Yay! I'm so happy to be here. Thanks so much, Don.
That's awesome. Yes, and you and Brandy have lots in common because you always like to glam it up, and you always like to do selfies and compare your pipes.
I know. And we also, I'm having a lady crush on Brandy with her heels.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we are singing from the same songbook when it comes to her heels. And I practice in heels and I have no problem with it.
That's hilarious. And that's for being on the Underdog Curse is how do you practice in heels? That'd be the whole show.
It is, you know. And people might say, why do you practice in heels when you have a hyperlordosis and a spondylolisthesis? And I'm like, well, not only do they look pretty, but they make me turn on my core. They give me leverage. There's a lot of things. I can always justify it.
That's great. You've turned those stilettos into tools.
So, exactly. That's just an extension of me.
That's so you can adjust better. That's great. So I'm excited to dive into your story. So tell me a little bit about it. Your dad was a chiropractor. Tell me a little bit about how you decided to be a chiropractor in the first place.
So I have three older brothers, and my dad and my uncles are all chiropractors. So it was a very, very male dominated profession.
Yep.
And so it never even crossed my mind that it was something that I could do. And I always wanted to be a vet. Actually, I'm an animal lover, and that was going to be where I was headed. I used to ride horses quite competitively. And then I had a big wake-up call because one of my mares got very sick and had to be put down. And I was like, oh my God, is that what vets do? I don't want to do that. You know, I was living in La La Land thinking that it was all, you know, sunshine and rainbows, and I didn't realize the other side of veterinary medicine. So about the same time, I was going over to Palmer for my brother's graduation, and I just saw how many females were walking across the stage, and I sat there. I was 15 years old, and I was like, the girls do this. this was, you know, back in 1990, oh my gosh, it must have been 1985 maybe, somewhere around there. I can't remember that. And my dad and my family were like, they didn't realize that I hadn't realized. And then I said, well, I'm going to do that. So that was my decision. So I had already done, set up my sciences and everything through school because I thought I was going to do vet science. So I just changed, you know, where I was headed and decided at 15 years old, I'm going to be a chiropractor.
So now you can work with the power that innates the body, not to distinguish it like a vet has to.
Exactly. So it is all sunshine and rainbows.
Well, sort of.
Sort of. So then we decided what school, where am I going to go? And I'm from the country, so I was a pretty sheltered country girl who rode horses and lived out of town. And being the only girl with three older brothers, you know, I was a little bit spoiled, but sheltered. And so my dad, I was very fortunate that my dad was very, very good friends with Clay Thompson. Clay was my dad's mentor at Palmer. So dad literally just picked up the phone and called Clay and said, where should we send Sherry? And Clay, at the time, he said, look, Dr. Sid Williams is the president in Atlanta. My granddaughter is going to life. The Olympics will be coming in 1996. I think you should send her there. I think that she doesn't have to deal with the snow. She doesn't have to deal with driving in the snow, you know. And these were all things that they had to consider because I was a country Australian girl, you know. And so that's, we ended up going to Atlanta.
And where in Australia did you live?
I'm from a town called Albury, Wodonga, which is halfway between Sydney and Melbourne. So it's 100,000 people, lots of snakes, lots of spiders, country, bushfires, you know, very, very wine country, which I love, but, you know, it's not the big city.
Yeah.
And so it was certainly a consideration for my family who were going to send their baby girl across the world. Where are we going to send her and who can keep an eye on her? Because I was only 17 when I moved to America.
Wow.
So it was, yeah, it was a big kind of shock. But at the same time, you know, on orientation day, I met some amazing friends who I'm still close with who were older than me, and they took me under their wing and they looked after me, and then I got on the dance team and it was sweet. Best years of my life.
That's awesome. And so when did you graduate?
I graduated the summer of 1996, which is when the Olympics were there. So I got the opportunity to dance in the opening ceremony.
Oh, no way.
That's Buddy.
Yeah.
Great day.
Yeah.
So we had a tremendous experience. Dr. Sid took me on under his wing, kind of like a daughter. So he was incredible because he was really good friends with Dad, and obviously they'd talked on the side and said, look, just keep an eye on her. I was at Life College from 1991 to 1996, and it was amazing, best years. And I'm still amazing friends with my colleagues who are all around the States and all practicing all over the world.
That's amazing. That's cool. So what did you do right after school?
So I finished school and I flew back and became an associate of my dad's. I was 22 years old. In hindsight, I look back and go, probably on the young side, certainly stepping into my dad's practice, which was farmers and truck drivers and, you know, tradies and electricians and, you know, that kind of thing. And I'm only 5'5" and, you know, 110 pounds or something along those lines. So they would look at me and go, oh, no, she's not strong enough. There's no way. Oh, no, does she even know what she's doing? Like, how old is she? That was certainly a massive challenge that I had to face. And then there was one time when I was in practice, I was getting so frustrated. I felt like I was just bashing my head against the wall because I was trying to schedule people and they had habits of, I know when to come. You don't need to tell me. I'll book when I need it. And I just felt like I was having this constant battle with people who thought they knew more. And so I went to my dad and said, I don't know, what am I doing? What do I need to do? And he just said, you need to just point the finger and realize that you're the one that went to chiropractic school. You're the one that knows better. You're the one that knows how to manage their health. And just, you know, grow a bit of a spine and just get stronger with love. And I did, and it completely changed my practice.
Great.
So I didn't get to be kind of arrogant. That's not the word.
No.
But in New Zealand, we call it bolshy. You know, it's like strong with love of, oh, you think you know when to come? Well, look at you. Obviously, you don't. You know, let's actually get you back on track.
That's cool. And so how long did that take you to go from, you know, worrying about what everybody thought to being a little bit more standing in your power?
It was a good 2 years. It was a good 2 years, you know, because I was on shaky ground as far as I knew what I was doing, and I had one of the best instructors in the world, but I needed to actually stand in my power, as you said, and grow some certainty. And I think the moment that I got strong and actually went, no, you're mistaken, because clearly you're broken here. Let's change this.
Yeah.
It just changed the whole course of my practice. So I have to reiterate, it's always with good intention and love. So you don't have to have conflict, you don't have to bash heads, but you definitely can't have a power struggle. You have to actually stand in your heels or whatever it is that you're standing in and actually go, no, this is where what we're going to do. Okay.
That's excellent. I think a lot of chiropractors have that issue at the beginning because they don't want to, you know, create any waves, and they want everyone to like them, and it's super hard to do that because a lot of us are amiable. We're really empathetic to other people, but we have to realize that sometimes we need to create that little friction at the beginning in order to get the results that we're looking for, right?
Yeah. And you know what, at the end of the day, there are some that may not have liked that, but they always respected it.
Right.
You know, so I'm not saying that I was friends with everybody and they all loved me.
No.
But there were some that were like, oh, you know, that pushback. But it created a respect of when they really needed me, they were like, oh, I really want your opinion, you know, and it actually changed things immensely.
That's interesting. So how did you go? Because your dad's practice was in Australia.
Yeah.
So how did you end up in New Zealand?
So I started dating a boy.
Uh-oh. It always starts that. I started dating.
And he was in the fittest state ever, but he was, he injured his back. And we had a conversation where I said, you can't live like this. If you're this fit and you're actually, you've hurt yourself, you need to look at changing careers. And then he said, well, interestingly, I considered doing chiropractic even well before we met. And I said, well, what's stopping you? Why did you put it on the shelf? Let's do it. He's like, oh, okay. So at the same time, Brian Kelly, Dr. Brian Kelly, had an incredible practice in Melbourne.
Yeah.
And I knew Brian and Simon because they'd come up the highway to come to my dad's Thompson seminar. So I met them, you know, 25, 28 years ago. And Brian's practice was for sale. So I rang him and I said, hey, I want to buy your practice. And he said, why do you want to buy my practice? And I just said, well, you know, my boyfriend wants to do chiropractic. We're going to be in Melbourne. And he said, oh, no, I'm not going to sell it to you. And I was like, what do you mean? You know, and he said, nah, do you know why I'm selling? And I said, no. And he goes, I've just been appointed president of the New Zealand College of Chiropractic, and you're going to come over and teach. And I just went, yeah, whatever. You know, I've lived in America for 6 years. I don't need to go overseas again. And then as it turned out, whatever way it happened, Dave didn't get into RMIT because he was a mature age. And so he was going to wait another year. And I said, oh, why do that? You know, let's call Brian and see if applications are still open for New Zealand. And he said, we deliberately leave applications open because we want to get the students who are passionate. We want to get the students who are driven. We want to get the students who really want it.
Yeah.
And we leave applications open because we get a lot of Aussie students that come over. And so within a week, we had made our decision to pack up and move to New Zealand. And then over we came.
So, oh, wow. And so so then when you moved to, he was going to school, and did you buy a practice or did you just start
No.
one?
No. So we drove around, we knew nobody, and we drove around Auckland for 3 weeks looking for a premises. Now, I am a bit of a chiropractic princess because I had my dad's practice and he was seeing, you know, upwards from 800 to 1,000 patient visits a week.
Yeah.
And it was all custom built. So we had internal doctor's rooms, and then we had hot seats around the side, and we had a 52 car parking lot. And so you can imagine driving around in Auckland and I'm like, well, nothing's good enough.
Yeah.
It wasn't the same. Anyway, we found a beautiful big old Californian bungalow that had a little cardboard sign in the window that said for rent. And I was like, oh. And so we looked into it, we leased it, we hemorrhaged all our money for 3 months in getting it set up, putting an x-ray machine in. And then we literally just sat and hoped that someone would call us. You know, I had no concept. That was one of the things you said to me, how do I kind of grow my practice? But I had no concept of marketing. I was always Alan Brady's daughter. And so I had new patients flooding in. I never had to lift a finger. And I came to another city in another country, and all of a sudden I was a nobody. And it was like, oh, I need to actually really get tough in my certainty and stay congruent with my message and get myself out there. And we hung a sign, we got a business name, and we just started and we opened doors.
That's cool. And so how did you grow at the beginning? Like, did you have to get out and meet people? Like, did they all just come?
They were lined up down the road because they heard that Sherry Brady was in town. It was hard. You know, we had rent to pay and bills to pay. And I was even wondering if one person would come in. So it was not easy. And so I had to get myself out there. You know, I screamed.
Yeah.
I went and I stood in shopping centers, mm-hmm. and I had to stay true to my message. And, you know, even after 14 years, we still have people that I met that first year of opening, they're still under care. And I'm like, I remember when we met, you know. And it really just is about not trying to do the sales pitch and not trying to be desperate. I think that, although we, you know, deep down we were, but, you know, you have to just call on your innate and your instinct and your truth about what it is, what we've got, and that people don't know about it. People just don't know. And you have to, you know, inspire them. This is what it actually is about, guys. And so, yeah, screenings and you know, having our banners, and we'd have our spine, and I'd just have a chair. I must say, we went to a big trade show and we decided to actually pack up the Zenith and take it on a trailer to the trade show. Now, the Zenith, as you know, they weigh 250 kilos.
Yeah, they're huge. Yeah.
You get a compressor and whatever. But we did a trade show, and I swear I'll never forget, it was like being on an infomercial. And so we were putting people on the high-low, and I'm lowering them, and I would get 20 people crowding around, and I'd be doing leg checks, and I'd be doing sacral restriction, and I'd be saying, see, so this SI joint's the same age as this SI joint. Why are they lifting differently? One would figure. And I started to teach, you know, and we would have people all crowding to say, what's going on here? And then, you know, a crowd attracts a crowd because people say, well, what are they looking at? I want to go and see what the big deal is.
Yeah.
So I got really good at that.
That's awesome. And did you have regular shows you did a year? Like,
were you doing trade shows here?
Yeah.
Like the parent and child show, the home show, and it was, you know, expensive, but then you kind of go, well, it's getting us out there. And even if people weren't completely booking in on the day, it left them with something. It left them with, oh yeah, remember that? Remember that lady that I saw at the show, and she had that fancy table? And yeah, so that's how we grew. And then, you know, I got heavily involved in sport. Dave and I, we're now married, obviously, with two kids.
Yeah.
We're both very sporty. And so I play a lot of netball, and I wouldn't say that chiropractic defines me, but it kind of does, because it oozes out of my pores. I can't help it. People are like, you're a chiropractor. Yeah, I am. You know, and it gets, conversation starts, as you know.
Yeah.
And so getting involved in sporting clubs, people eventually would, you know, get to know me and realize I'd be pretty genuine, and they'd ask questions, or if they had anxiety or if they had fear, they felt safe to ask me, you know, well, what is it? You know, what is it that you do? And what is the click sound? And does it hurt? And I'm a bit worried. And, you know, it opened a safe space because I formed a relationship with people, you know.
No, that's great. Yeah. And going on with the adjusting, I was kind of, how did you get into teaching Thompson? Because obviously your dad learned from the Clay Thompson who created the whole technique. How did that all start?
So I just started assisting with my dad's seminars, and for selfish reasons more than anything. I know he wanted my assistance, but it also taught me, it helped me. I think when you want to really learn something, you have to teach it to someone else.
Yes.
You know, even in school, I think I was never very good with CNS or PNS.
Yeah.
And so what I figured was, right, I would organize a tutor group and I would figure it out, and then I would teach it to my peers, And they loved that, but it also served me. And so that's where I started assisting and teaching. And then Dr. Rob Jackson, who is also a certified Thompson instructor and has traveled the world for 30 years, he came over to New Zealand a couple of times and did some seminars, and I assisted him. And then he presented me with the instructor certification in 2006. And, you know, Dr. Brian Kelly, he had tremendous, tremendous vision. Yep. And he almost saw my potential more before I did. And in fact, he and Vicky definitely saw my potential before I ever did. And so it was really nice to have beautiful friends that nudged me into my, you know, shoes, I suppose.
Yeah.
And, you know, he changed the whole technique program at the college. And he just, at the technique meeting, he looked me in the eye and he said, "What do you need to give our students a solid base in Thompson technique?" And I said, "I need about 32 hours. And he said, "Done, done. You're going to teach for 8 weeks, 4 times a week. You're going to have 2 labs. So 3 hours worth of labs. You're going to do a 2-hour lecture, and they are going to get a solid grounding in Thompson technique." And that was scary.
Yep.
And it made me get prepared and do my PowerPoint and do video and instructional stuff and do my notes and fine tune and refine and refine. And that was 14 years ago. And so now I could do it underwater in my sleep with, you know, white background noise even.
That's awesome. So, yeah. And just curious, because I know I've had a few patients or practice members that are female, and, yeah. and they want to be a chiropractor. And of course I'm 6'4" and like 240 pounds. And they're like, "Do you have to be huge to adjust?" And I'm like, "No, I'm like, I've been adjusted by 5'2" women. Not a big deal at all. And so if, you know, maybe there's a female out there that's listening that might be having some challenges with technique, what kind of advice do you have? Because I wouldn't really know, because I can kind of depend on my weight and my size a bit. Like, what do you do when you don't have that weight and size to depend on with your adjusting?
So this is actually going to sound a little bit sexist, and I definitely don't want it to be.
However, bring it on. Bring it on.
When you don't have that brute strength,
yep.
and that size, what it does is it makes you very, very good with your speed.
Yep.
Being a great manual adjuster is not about, it's never about size or, yep. or muscle strength. And as much as Brandy and I joke about our guns and our pipes and, you know, that kind of thing,
yeah.
I definitely would say it helps to be fit. It helps to be fit to look yeah. after yourself, but that's in any game, I think.
Right.
But speed, it's all about the speed. It's about practicing. It's about centering yourself with your timing. And when you actually have your hands on somebody, you can feel when you hit that beautiful sweet spot, when they're ready and receptive for their adjustment.
Yeah. So it's like the window. It's the window.
It's the window. And yeah. it's the little tricks. Like, I do manual cervical chair.
Yeah.
And I use this as a contact. I don't know if you can see, but I actually use the
middle finger.
Middle finger.
Yeah.
Which allows me to actually, I use my thumb and my index finger to traction. So one of the most important things with cervical chair, my dad taught me, is when you're sitting up with the cervicals, you need to give a little bit of traction, because what that does is it decompresses the cervical spine, it gaps the joint, and then I focus mainly on lateral flexion, and if they start to resist me, I just wobble. Yeah. I literally yeah. just hold them and I'm like, "I've got you." And they actually feel safe in my hands. And I'm not saying that from a, you know, arrogant point of view. That's the feedback I've had. They go, "Oh, I actually feel very secure and reassured in your hands." So if you're a new grad, and I did this, I never started like that. I started rigid. And, you know, a bit nervous. And if you're sitting up on somebody and you're rigid, yeah. what are they going to do? They're going to get rigid.
Yeah.
Right? So your energy comes from your inner self, and your hands are soft. Your hands are soft but certain. So you've got your contact, soft hands, and if they're fighting you, you just actively engage, you know, their head so that they have to let go, and then there's the sweet spot. And it actually becomes really easy, really easy. So it's not about body size at all. It is about timing. It's about sweet spot, and it's about confidence in your ability. When you have that confidence that, I love it when people come in and say, oh, I've seen chiropractors and they can't move my neck. I'm like, oh, really? Okay.
You're like, haven't seen the ninja.
yes, exactly. So no, I think that you have to have great certainty and confidence in yourself and your own abilities, and you know, keep your hands soft.
That's awesome. And do you have any other tips for, I know you'd said you'd done some screenings. How about, that was external things for growing the practice at the beginning. Yeah. How about internal things as far as like generating referrals or all those kind of things?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have a bit of a philosophy of under-promising and over-delivering.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think that when you overpromise, you can look very salesy, and yep. and it's very easy to come across super salesy when you're passionate. I understand that too, because you can have this passion and then people are like, oh my God, she wouldn't shut up about da da da. So you've got to find that fine line, but definitely just being truthful about what's going on. You know, you don't have to over emphasize that they're going to die, or, you know, you don't need to use scare care. You just be true with what you see just say, look, you know, this is what I know. Chiropractic has been shown that when you get adjusted on a regular basis, that it can repattern your system. It changes your neuroplasticity. You get healing at the cellular level. You may not even see change in your pain immediately, but we know that when you're connected, you do better. So no matter what is going on from a symptom point of view, and I understand that you're here for a certain thing, we know you're going to do better when you're connected. I think that people want to know three things when they first come in. What's wrong?
Yep.
Can you help me? And how much is it going to cost?
Right.
There are three things they want to know. And so when you actually say, here's what's going on, yes, I can help you, and this is what you're looking at, and just be upfront. They will be very, very grateful that you were honest and genuine. And guess what? They will tell 10 of their friends. And so I wasn't afraid to ask for referrals. I would gain rapport with people and say, you know, have you got kids? Are they getting checked? Why wouldn't they get checked? Have you seen kids in the playground and what happens? You know, how could you let them walk around with subluxated spine? This is, you know, I wouldn't let that happen because I care and care about you. Let's at least check them. And it just, it's about changing a belief system. It's not just about changing or challenging their symptom side of things. I think that you need to, they can feel like their belief system's challenged, but as Brandy has said, and I love this about her, you connect with them, you hold their hand and you take them on a journey and teach them something new.
Yeah. And then part of it too is making sure we tell them they have responsibility as well, right? Because that seems that every single practice member or patient comes in and they have a totally different environment. And so they respond to things differently too, right? So,
Yeah. I think that, that they've grown up in a paradigm where they take a pill and it fixes it.
Yeah.
And they really don't, they don't have any empowerment. They don't realize the power of their body to heal. They've given their power away and they're putting it in a pill. And so they come to you and they still have that expectation. And you say, now, hang on, I'm not curing or fixing. I'm facilitating the power of the body. So we're a team. So there's certain things that you have to do to make a good team member. Mm-hmm. And this is what we have to do. Ah, and it gives them their power back. They actually love that.
Yeah. So part of it's being, like I said, that's the leadership that you said before, where you wanted to, it's a little bit uncomfortable, especially for an amiable personality that might be a little bit of a people pleaser.
Yeah.
And I always say when I'm coaching my people too, I'm saying, you know, there's a price, but there's also a promise.
Absolutely.
And we got to tell them what the price is, though, because we can't just tell them about the promise and not tell them what the price is going to be before.
Absolutely. Yeah. I did that when I was in my 20s. I was all about rah, rah, rah and passion. And then I was like, I felt like I was bashing my head against the wall going, why don't they get it? I don't understand. How did they not get it? And, you know, something that two amazing people who are in my world, one is your beautiful wife, Brandy, and the other is Dave Jackson, actually. Yeah. And it was at Fiji on Fire. They both actually reiterated, and I've learned this finally after 20 years in practice, if you're saving lives, you want to basically save the ones who are swimming towards you. You know, yes. Like I talked about being in the Coast Guard. I think it was Dave that was talking about, and he just said, don't worry about those that are actually gung-ho on going the other way. You know, all you do is get frustrated and bash your head against the wall, and you expend energy on that. I think that you save the ones who are swimming towards you, who are actually wanting to get on your boat. Yeah. And then off you go. And then you don't lose sleep and get all angry and frustrated and impact on your health because they didn't get it. Mm-hmm. Some people are not ready.
Yeah. And Dr. Jill LaMarche always said, some will, some won't. Who cares? Someone's waiting. So that's always a good one.
Yeah. I love that. I love that. Exactly. Yeah. It's taken me a long time, though, because I was so genuinely passionate and intent on changing the world. And, you know, I still believe we're changing it one spine at a time, but there are some that are ready and then there are some that are not. And you just have to let go with love, which is a really, really good saying as well. I think one day they might get it and then I'm here.
Mm-hmm. Well, which that brings us to the very next point is many chiropractors out there get all frustrated, bang their heads against the wall. And this is kind of the second phase of practice where you kind of hit your stride. You start to blow up your practice, but then maybe you start to get a little off balance with family, with your health. Have you ever had a burnout time? And can you share a little bit about what that was and how you got over it?
I've had two burnout times. The first, this was pre-marriage, pre-children, working in my dad's practice. I was young, high energy, and I'm not young anymore, but I'm still high energy.
Oh, you're still young.
I give, giving. Yep. And I was working long hours in the world of chiropractor. You know, I was working Monday to Saturday. Every day I would have a 2-hour lunch break, which sounds like a lot, but I was there, you know, 8 till 12 and then 2 till 6. Every day I was seeing between 3 and 4 across, which, you know, is, so I was seeing relatively good numbers, you know, because times that I could never do the 5 across thing because I like to talk. So I would always run behind.
Yeah.
But I was working long, big hours. You know, I don't know many chiropractors that work full days, 6 days a week in this day and age. And I started while I was making great money and from a financial side of things, from a personal side of things, I was missing out on my sport. I couldn't go out on a Friday night with my friends because I had to work Saturday. And then come Saturday, I was so tired that I was just like, oh, I'm going to bed. You know, so in my 20s, that kind of sucks. I wanted to be social. I wanted to have my friends and my sport and my horses. And so I ended up having a really big kind of blue with my dad, and I'm just like, I'm not working Saturdays anymore, I don't get to play netball and whatever. And but I really just threw all my toys out of the cot and I just said, no, I'm kind of done actually. And I set some boundaries, even with my dad, who of course I love dearly and respected to the moon, and it was hard, but I had to draw some lines and draw some boundaries or I was imploding. And it wasn't about the numbers and what was going into my account. While it was great, I had to change things because it wasn't great. So that was the first one. The second burnout happened actually earlier this year. And it was because We now have, fast forward, we have two children who are very, very busy kids. They've got lots on. They play a lot of sport. And I teach at the school occasionally. And then we have three businesses. So we have two practices, and then we also import Zenith tables. And I'm a typical Virgo, and I'm an A-type personality, and I was putting pressure on myself. So I nobody else was putting pressure on me. It was me.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Because of that, it became about got to keep going, you know, because I was thinking about schooling for my kids and, you know, the house, which we've renovated, and things that I was just like, right, I've got to do more. And I had a few kind of hiccups where my x-ray machine stopped working, my view box blew up, the toilet broke in the practice, and my nanny gave me 4 days notice all on the same day.
Oh.
I mean, I can't do this anymore. And I ended up waking up at 1 a.m. having a panic attack, which I've never had in my life.
Yeah.
So I couldn't breathe. And I just thought, what the hell am I doing? This is absolutely crazy. And what I did, I was, I'm really, really beautiful friends with Dr. Jen Barham Floriani.
Yes. Okay.
And Dr. Jen reached out to me and we chatted, and she said, honey, you can't sustain this pace. What are you doing? You cannot. Even Superwoman needs a rest.
Yeah.
Like, okay. So she gave me some great guidance on bringing things back to myself, my health, some supplements, breathing. And, you know, I'm also really fortunate to have the beautiful Vicky Kelly in my life. Many of your viewers probably know who Vicky Kelly is. If you don't, VickyKelly.com. I am going to give her a shameless plug because she is a mind trainer and she's written a book on mindfulness. And thank you, universe. You know, I actually think the universe has put her in my life to help create some balance and, again, set boundaries. And when I started making non-negotiables, like, no, Mondays and Wednesdays is when I train. That I'm not in practice. My phone's off. That's when I train.
Yeah.
And Fridays is my sanctuary. I am not in practice Fridays. Doesn't matter how many people there are. No, Monday to Thursday, there's my hours. I'm not in practice Fridays. But setting very clear boundaries with love, and it restored everything. And now I feel like I'm navigating much better waters.
Yeah. Are you feeling like that's your stride? Are you enjoying your system now? Yeah.
Yes, I've definitely found my stride. I'm one that doesn't do so well with surprises, which is why I had the drama earlier in the year, because that all happened and I was like, oh. So I'm a planner, and I think when things are nice and organized and planned, I thrive. When I feel like I'm looking after myself, I don't think it's selfish to look after yourself. I think women and mothers definitely give, and they leave themselves last, and then they've got nothing to give because they do burn out. It's not selfish to go and get your hair done, or it's not selfish to go and have a beautiful long lunch with your girlfriends and have a couple of wines or whatever it is that is feeding your soul. And your kids, my kids see that. My kids see that, like, no, I'm not pandying to you at the moment because I'm actually doing this for me. And I'm going to raise two girls that are hopefully going to be that way as well.
Well, and I think you come back recharged, and you're even a better mom when you, because I've heard this, the statement, selfishly, or be unselfishly selfish.
Yes.
Because when you look after yourself, you can actually serve at a higher level. So I think that is a huge, huge thing. And that'd be a great lesson, because most of the people, and I've been doing, like, I've got probably about almost 30 or so interviews under my belt. Every single person burns out because they stop looking after themselves.
That's right.
They start worrying about everybody else, or or they have goals that they set that they're like, I didn't even, like, what is that goal? Like, I don't even know what that goal means. Like, I said, hit a certain volume. Who cares?
Yeah.
Like, but what do I really want, right?
Yeah, exactly. So I went from seeing decent, I don't know, in the chiropractic world, I don't like to talk about numbers. Actually don't. I hate it. I can't stand when a chiropractor kind of says, oh, how many are you seeing a week? I'm like, I'm changing lives as best as I can, and I have a great PVA, and that's all that matters.
Yeah.
I don't talk numbers. I hate it. However, I feel like, I can't remember what I was going to say now. I feel like you have to take care of yourself. And not only when you take care of yourself, when you've got little people watching you, they're sponges. They're watching you because Bruce Lipton, you know, I love him as well. I'm dropping all these amazing names. I'm actually so fortunate to have them in my life. But Dr. Bruce Lipton talks about kids being in theta from the age of 2 to 7. And they're basically like an iPod downloading programs, So they're watching you and how you are in your life. And if they're not, if you're not looking after you, you're going to create problems for them. And that's the last thing that, that you want as a parent, you know? So I think it's very important that you bring it back to you and look after you.
Well, and that's perfect because, again, it just it cascades into my next question, because the next thing is about external influences, because we're always influenced by people around us. And so far, almost every single step of your life, it seems like you had a mentor or a friend or someone who's there to help to put you on track. So have you ever done that? Have you done that consciously? Do you consciously check your circle of influence and make sure everybody's supporting you? And then, or does it come innately to you?
I think I'm a very big, I would have to say, because I have a consciousness and an awareness around who is in my world. And certainly when I became a mum, I became a mama bear, and I'm very conscious around who is influencing my children as well. But I think I've also been very fortunate in that the universe has taken care of me and put people in my life for a reason. I have had some, you know, negative. That was one of your questions that you said to me, you know, has there been people that you've had to almost fire that have been in my circle?
Or see less or create a bigger boundary. Yeah.
Yes, yes. That's an amazing question, Don, because absolutely. I think in my 20s and 30s, you know, I had big circles of friends and I was real social and, you know, and I've, you know, I know it's hard to believe, but I've hit my 40s and, you know, my circle is much less. The people that are in my very, very inner circle who I trust, it's much less. And it's those who I want to positively influence, my family. And, you know, I think it's come down over the years. I really thought about your question and it's thought about belief systems. I think that there have been times where belief systems have clashed a little. And it's not that I burn people because they're not on my train. That's not it at all, I think. But when kids come into the fray, you know, the mummy wars out there, crazy. From age 0 to about age 4, everybody thinks they know better with raising kids and how you feed them and how they sleep, and you have to sleep train them, and what are they doing and why are they not hitting milestones and what are you feeding them, and oh my God, I can't believe they're using disposable diapers as opposed to, you know, whatever it is. I think the mummy wars are crazy, and my belief systems certainly around the healthcare of my children differ from the norm.
Yep.
And I don't get into fights, but I've chosen to do certain things with my kids differently than the norm and certainly the medical paradigm. And so I really have just learned to fly a little bit under the radar, not completely, because I also get vocal sometimes if someone pushes me. So if someone's going to push me on something, I will push back.
Yeah.
And then educate in a way. You know, I'll give you an example. I was at the gym and I looked really tired, and one of the ladies in the class, as we're waiting, she looked at me and she goes, "You look tired, are you okay?" And I went, "Oh, I was up all night with Maddie because she's teething." And then they said, "Oh, Nurofen, it's my best friend." And I don't have a poker face, so I pulled a face. I kind of went, "No." And she looked at me like, "What? What's wrong with Nurofen?" And I just went, and I took a deep breath, and I was very I was paused in my response, and I was thoughtful in my response because I didn't want anybody to feel that I was judging them. That's the biggest. And I said, I might be the exception rather than the rule, but I believe that a baby, if they've got a temperature, then that's actually the body's response to killing and cooking the bugs. And, you know, the latest research states that it's kind of okay for them to have a temperature as long as you monitor it, because they're actually going to recover quicker. And the natural immune response of the body is to fire up, because the pathogens can't live in that state. And if you suppress that with medication in whatever form, I know they teach you that that's okay. The way I work is I'd rather my kids to have a temperature and I'll just stay up with them and be tired, you know? And she kind of looked at me and she didn't really respond, but you could see it changed. She was thinking about it. And so I won't ever try and say, I'm right, you're wrong, blah, blah. It's not that. It's just being thoughtful in your response and educating at the same time. And that's what I've done over the last, you know, 10 and a half years since the kids have been born. And so getting back to your question and inner circle and belief systems, you know, it definitely changes your dynamic when kids come into it and how you raise them and how you live. I tell you something really funny. I know I'm talking a lot. Sorry.
No, that's it. This is your interview.
My beautiful 10-year-old daughter did a persuasive talk this year at her school. And she came home and I said, well, what's your topic? What are you doing? She goes, well, I've chosen why it's important to be healthy. And immediately I said, did you choose that topic because you thought I'd help you? And she said, no, Mum, I know. I know what I want to say. I've got my key points. And I said, oh, well, what are they? And she said, moving my body because, you know, my sport, or if it's just outside running around, just getting moving. She said, food and nutrition, because you are at me if I want junk food because it's not going to fuel my body. So, you know, and that probably includes water because you don't let us have juice. So water is better because it hydrates us. And I'm like,
good.
And then she said, and rest. And I said, well, why rest? And she said, well, you know, when I'm playing my rep soccer, and I feel like when I rest, it helps me recharge and then I'm less likely to get injured. And I don't do, you know, I'm really frustrated when I get injured. And I'm just like, oh my God, you can do my health talks from now on.
That's so awesome.
What I said to her when we were going, and she ended up coming second in the whole school for persuasive talk. So I was obviously incredibly proud, but I said to her on our drive to school, she said, do I need to change anything? And she said, and I said, no, first of all, I'm not going to change it for you. You've got it. But I said, secondly, you've lived your whole life to give this talk. I said, it's not like you woke up one day and decided I'm going to move my body, eat healthy and rest. You've lived your whole life. This is how we live. And you're going to be giving this information to kids who have never heard it. Which is sad, but it's true, you know. There'll be kids that think moving their thumbs on the Xbox is exercise. Right. There'll be kids that think a packet of chips are potatoes and therefore a vegetable, you know. Whereas you understand and you're talking, you know, so it's all about that inner circle of who's influencing my kids and what are they learning, what are they sponging, what are they downloading. And therefore, as I've gotten older, that inner circle is incredibly important on who's influencing us and guiding my children, certainly if I wasn't around, you know.
Yeah, so we're almost looking for quality rather than quantity.
Absolutely.
Well, in closing, I want to first of all thank you very much for being on my podcast. And
oh, I'm so happy. We could talk all day.
I know. We got to keep to our time limit. No, but
no. That's good. You've got to keep me to time. That's why I'm behind in practice.
Yeah, that's why only four across. No,
exactly.
But just in closing, do you have any words of advice for anybody out there that might be, you know, struggling practice? Because again, a lot of people in practice don't have the great networks that we have. And what kind of words of advice do you have for the people that will be listening around the world?
I think that we are in an age of technology. I think that there is information at our fingertips now more than ever. There's things like this exact interview. I know that there are people all around the world who are lifting the philosophy of chiropractic from a technology point of view. So even if you're on your own and you're feeling a little lost, I think that you, if you just get onto things like this and re-energize yourself and realize actually we're so not alone. We are so connected. We're more connected than ever. And if you find your tribe, you know, if you're really struggling, you've got to be authentic to you. I think that if you have amazing philosophy, then find those worldwide who are congruent with your belief systems, and there's your tribe. And from that, you'll actually grow. And then guess what will happen? You'll attract your tribe.
Yeah.
So the universe will provide. It always does. You go and do an amazing pediatric seminar and you'll have 10 new babies in the next week, because that's how universal laws work. I think that you have to trust yourself. You've got to trust yourself. Don't find that certainty. Walk your talk. Look after yourself and trust yourself. And people are waiting to be inspired. It's not that they're against it. They just don't know the true brain-body connection. They don't know. It's not that they don't get it. Some don't, but most of them don't know. So you've got to tell them. We are, as in Brandy's words, we are the answer.
I love that. We are the answer. Okay.
And get on Brandy's. I would also actually suggest get on Brandy's Facebook, because she has some amazing pearls. Every single morning when I wake up, because of the time difference, she's the first thing that's on my newsfeed. And I'm like, what's Brandy got to say today?
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much for being on the podcast. Really appreciate it. Coming all the way from Auckland, New Zealand. We really appreciate it.
Oh, you're the best. Thank you so much, Don.
And for everybody out there, we covered a lot of stuff. And I think one of the key things is be true to yourself, surround yourself with awesome people, and look after yourself. So with that, everybody out there, get out there and crush the curse.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you receive value from this episode, please take some time to rate and review us on iTunes or your favorite place to listen to podcasts. If you know a fellow chiropractor that could benefit from this message, please share it with them. Because it's my goal to provide you with great content, please contact me if you have any questions at drdonmcdonald.com or find me on Facebook. I look forward to hearing from you. So until next time, Dr. Don out.